Well, this morning we continue our teaching series entitled A New Beginning. And as we get started, let's watch this short little video. The fact is, we all have regrets. Everyone does. Some are small, some are large. But let's not forget the good news. It's possible. It's always possible to live beyond our regrets. We can always experience a new beginning. We can start over. No matter who we are, no matter what we regret, it is possible always to begin anew. God always offers a new start, a new beginning. And last week we talked about the different kinds of regret that we can embrace. There's the regrets of action. These are the times when we kind of smack our foreheads and say to ourselves, oh, I can't believe I did such and such. There are the regrets of inaction. Times we failed to take action, opportunities missed, time wasted, words never spoken. And then there are regrets of reaction. Sometimes our greatest regrets are due to something hurtful that was done to us. When bad things happen to us, we naturally regret them. And while we wish we could have our regrets surgically removed from our memories, from our consciousness, we all know it doesn't quite work that way. As a result, we often hold on. We hold on to our regrets and get stuck in what is called the sorry cycle, an endless pattern of longing and regret. And we can't seem to shake what we've done or what's been done to us. Psychologists have a term for getting stuck in that cycle. They call it rumination, like a cow chewing its cud. In our minds, we chew on our regrets over and over and over again. We long to make it right, but are never quite able to do so, which only then leads to more regret. Last week, we also learned that we can actually learn to love our regrets when we begin to see them not as a finish line, but as a starting line. Remember, regret is meant to be a hopeful emotion that can launch us into a better future and closer walk with God. And over the next few weeks, we're going to learn some important steps to experiencing a new beginning. So if you can find a Bible or you brought a Bible, I invite you to take hold of it and follow along as together. Today we explore an important decision every one of us has to make in moving beyond our regrets. But first, let's pray. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be pleasing to you, O Lord, our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. Okay, let's get started. So when it comes to regrets, the first thing we must do is decide between two choices. And choice number one is hiding our regret. You see, when it comes to our regrets, many of us just choose to hide our regrets. And it makes sense. It's a very natural response to want to keep our regrets hidden. But here's the thing. The regret may be hidden, but it's still there. It's not dead. It's just been buried alive. And anything buried alive will fight to come back to life. I mean, think of it this way. Have you ever been in a swimming pool with a beach ball? And if you have, like myself, then you know if you take the beach ball and you press it down in the water, it's going to pop back up. It's not going to want to stay down there. I've even tried to sit on it and see if I can keep it down. But it's always fighting to come back out of the water. That's what it's like when we choose to hide our regrets. It's like we're walking around trying to live our lives while at the same time holding a beach ball under the water. Maybe you're starting a new relationship. You're attracted to someone, but you have regrets from past relationships. You're trying to put your best foot forward, but that regret is still there, trying to jump up like a beach ball and remind you of your past mistakes. Maybe you're thinking about taking on a venture, a new venture of some kind, something that involves some risk. You've prayed about it, sought wise counsel, and you see green lights saying to move forward, but the regret of failure from the past starts to whisper in your ear. You try to drown out those voices, but they keep popping up like a beach ball under the water. The regret now can be anything. It can be a bankruptcy, a divorce, a harsh word that brought an end to a relationship. It can be a DUI, a job loss, a repeated sin pattern of some kind. We don't want to think about it. So we shove our regrets under the water, and we can get really good at keeping them there. Some of us push our regrets down and live in denial. We fake life. We put on a show. We try to live our lives in such a way that when people look at us, we exude personal happiness, a cheery and functional family, glowing success. While on the inside, we're struggling to deny and hold down our regrets. Others get really good at multitasking. The regret is there, but they're so busy or so angry or have gotten really good at numbing themselves to the regret. But there is a real danger in hiding the regret. Hiding our regret can keep us from giving our best to what is in front of us right now, and we're likely, therefore, to create new and more regrets. Hiding our regret can also paralyze us. We can't possibly move forward in life if we keep hanging on to the regrets of yesterday. Remember, regrets are like a beach ball. in the swimming pool. They're always fighting to come up to the surface. As a result, they keep us from moving forward to be all that God created us to be. In 2 Samuel chapter 11 in the Old Testament, we find a story of someone who tried to hide his regret. David is the king of Israel. He's powerful, he's revered, and he's in complete and total control. While his men are off fighting a war, David is strolling around on the roof of his palace, which they kind of did in those days, when one evening he notices a beautiful woman in the building next door. Apparently, this was no innocent glance, because he's instantly smitten by her beauty. She is the wife of one of his most accomplished soldiers, Uriah. Sadly, David's lust overrules his judgment. He calls for Bathsheba and sleeps with her. David knows this is wrong, and if he felt any regret, that next day he just pushed that beach ball down under the water. David chooses to hide what he's done. But that beach ball starts to come up. It starts to surface and becomes more difficult to hide when Bathsheba comes back and says, "David, I got news. I'm pregnant." Again, David faces the choice. Will he deal with his regret or will he try to hide it? Unfortunately, David chooses to push a little harder to keep that beach ball down under the water. He calls Uriah home from the battlefield, figuring if Uriah sleeps with his wife, he'll think the child is his, and David's regret can then remain under the water, can remain hidden. But Uriah refuses to enjoy the pleasures of home while his men are risking their lives on the battlefield. As a result, this beach ball becomes an even bigger problem for King David. Once again, David faces a choice, a decision, and once again he chooses to hide. He sends Uriah back to the front line and instructs his generals to abandon him on the battlefield so that Uriah is struck down and killed. Now, not only is David an adulterer and a liar, he's also a murderer. Another beach ball in the water. David is becoming pretty skilled at hiding his regrets. With one hand pushing the beach ball down, he now brings Bathsheba into his house, and she becomes his wife. The regret remains hidden. Well, sort of. God sends Nathan, a prophet, to tell David a little story that goes like this. It's found in 2 Samuel chapter 12. And beginning in verse 1, we read this story. Now, this is Nathan telling King David this story. Nathan says to David, "There were two men in a certain town. One was rich and one was poor. The rich man owned a great many sheep and cattle. The poor man owned nothing but one little lamb he had bought. He raised that little lamb and it grew up with his children. It ate from the man's own plate and drank from his cup. He cuddled it in his arms like a baby daughter. One day a guest arrived at the home of the rich man, but instead of killing an animal from his own flock or herd, he took the poor man's lamb and killed it and prepared it for his guest." David hears the story and he becomes incensed. He's incensed by Nathan's story. And in verses 5 and 6 we read this, "As surely as the Lord lives," David vowed, "any man who would do such a thing deserves to die. He must repay four lambs to the poor man for the one he stole and for having no pity." Now, I wonder how long Nathan paused after hearing David's response. I can imagine, you know, the tension kind of building. But in verse 7, it just says, "Then Nathan said to David, 'You are that man. You are that man.'" And the beach ball breaks through the surface. Nathan then goes on to tell David what God revealed to him about the adultery, the deception, the murder. And again, David has a choice. He could continue hiding. I mean, he got rid of Uriah. Surely he could get rid of Nathan. But thankfully, David makes a better choice. In verse 13, we read, "Then David confessed to Nathan, 'I have sinned against the Lord.'" Here we learn that David chose to recognize his regret. And that's the other choice we have. Choice number two is recognize our regret. Our choice is either hide it or recognize it. You see, like David, if we make the choice to hide our regret, we'll go nowhere. But when we choose to recognize our regret, we then have the hope of experiencing a new start, a new beginning. I now want to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Greg. He was faced with a similar decision to David, to hide or to recognize his regret. Let's watch the video.
My name is Greg, and this is my starting over story. So I grew up in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and I think what most people would call a pretty typical home. Mom and a dad and one younger brother. Church was not a huge part of our life. We did go on Sundays, but it was just the place where we had to wear bad socks and I didn't enjoy going. The first time I remember being introduced to alcohol, I was probably about 13 years old. I was hanging out with an older kid, his name was Chad, and we stole a couple bottles of wine from my parents' liquor cabinet. And we drank the bottle of wine, and we made screwdrivers. And when I got home, I remember that I had we had this downhill driveway into the garage, and I remember the garage door wasn't up, so I remember wrecking into the garage. I remember my parents yelling at me. I remember crying and hugging a toilet. I remember promising that I would never do this again. What I also remember is that even though the consequences were bad, that I thought I had found the answer to life's problems that frankly I didn't even know I had before that day. All the fear and doubt and insecurity in the world just kind of slipped away when I drank, and I thought I'd found the answer to life. My parents had different ideas growing up that was not okay in our home, so I found myself in trouble all the time. It's funny, my mom would say, you know, I needed to get different friends, but what she didn't realize is I had become the friend that other people should get a different one for. That's kind of the route my high school took. I think probably the first time that a light bulb came on, I'd been on a bender, came home to steal money. That was my job. I snuck into the house and got caught with my hand in the cookie jar, and rather than coming out up with some lie like I normally would, I remember just saying, "I have a problem with drugs and drinking, and I can't stop, and I don't know what to do." And so my father actually knew instantly what he wanted to do, so they told me that a van was on its way to my house to come pick me up and take me away to my first treatment center. So I was 17 years old at that time. I felt helpless and lost and clueless as to how I can make it through life, because I couldn't imagine life going on as I was living it, but I certainly couldn't imagine any other way either at that point. I also looked at my family and realized that I had destroyed any resemblance of what a family is. What do I do now? I've thrown away everything, life's over. I didn't see how more could happen after what I'd done. I won't say that treatment did a lot of good things or life change happened there, but what did happen was I met a counselor named Rob. When Rob would share what it was like for him to want to drink or get high, I knew that Rob was just like me. And I had grown up to that point thinking I was the only one that felt that way inside. A seed was planted that if Rob could do it, then maybe there was hope for a guy like me too. I had an aunt who lived in Chicago named Fran, and Fran had recently gotten sober herself and offered that if I wanted to change my life, she offered to let me move out with her to give me a new chance and a new start. So I moved out to Chicago. Fran introduced me to a few other people who were closer to my age and also had gotten sober and recovering. I began to have just, I guess you'd call it a glimmer of hope, you know, hope that if it was possible for these people, that maybe it could be possible for me too. The reality was I was still a long way away, many years away from getting off this downward destructive sorry cycle.
Now over the next couple of weeks, we're going to hear more of Greg's story. But his story of starting over, his story of experiencing a new beginning, began when he chose. He made that choice to recognize his regret. Bottom line, we have an enemy. We have an enemy who wants us to keep our regrets in the closet, to keep our regrets in the dark. He whispers in our ears, if people find out, it will ruin you. Don't you dare let that out. And so there it sits, buried but not dead, hidden but still powerful. It sits below the surface, feeding our shame, feeding our heartache. But if we want a new beginning, we've got to bring our regrets to the surface, expose it to the light, and recognize them. And let's face it, that's not an easy thing to do. Most of us would rather keep it under the water and hope that, you know, it goes away or get better all on its own. However, the truth is, it never goes away. It never, ever, ever goes away. So here's the deal. I hope today can be a Nathan moment for every one of us. I know God wants us to recognize our regrets, break that sorry cycle, and experience a new beginning. Last week, we talked about the Apostle Peter and how he overcame his regrets. Check out what Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6. He said, "So humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time, He will lift you up in honor." At the right time, He will lift you up in honor. You see, we have one of two options. We can hide our regrets, or we can humble ourselves and recognize them, banking on God's promise through Jesus to forgive us and free us from our regrets. So if we're ready to trust God with our regret, here's what we need to do. First, we must get honest with ourselves. We have regrets. Some are small, some are big. We have regrets. There are things that have been done to us or things we have done. And first, we have to face the facts. We have to confront the facts. We've got to face them head on. It happened. We were wrong. We wronged someone. We broke a promise. We told a lie. We cheated, caused pain, received pain. Something happened. So step one, tell ourselves that it happened. Next, we get honest with God. Whatever happened will come as no surprise whatsoever to God, but He needs to hear it from us. There's nothing God doesn't know and nothing He doesn't feel. He knows all about us. He knows when we're hurting, when we're crying, cussing, anesthetizing, ignoring, avoiding. He knows all about us. God knows. And we've got to get honest with God about what happened and how we feel. That's how a real relationship works. And finally, we need to get honest with someone else. Someone who can be a Nathan to us and help us experience a new beginning. You know, the Urbana United Methodist Church is a community of Jesus followers and seekers. And God calls us to be a part of a community of people because we need each other on this journey of finding our way back to God and being all that God created us to be. We need each other to help us experience a new beginning. So let's tell someone we worship with, or someone from a small group, or a trusted friend. We need to stop the hiding and let someone know. A study came out last May from the Columbia Business School that found that the average person is holding on to 13 secrets, five of which they've never told a living soul. And it's not the secret itself that will haunt you. It's all that mental energy you do ruminating and thinking about it. This new research shows that some people actually feel physically heavier when they're burdened with a secret. And that extra weight can skew how you navigate your surroundings. When participants were asked to judge the slope of a hill or the length of a distance, those who were preoccupied with keeping secrets judged the hills as steeper and the distances longer than they really were. Michael Slepian, a professor at the Columbia Business School, told The Atlantic, "We found that when people were thinking about their secret burdens, they actually acted as if they were burdened by physical weight." Slepian and his team examined 13,000 real-life secrets to figure out what people are keeping secrets about, what it's like to have a secret, and why secret keeping has overwhelmingly been viewed as a negative human experience. These secrets involve burdens like telling a lie, harming someone, drug use, theft, violating someone's trust, sexual infidelity, or a secret hobby. The team then asked the participants how often their minds wandered to think about those secret burdens in the past month, and how often they found themselves in situations that forced them to actively conceal these secrets. Secrets were far more likely to come to the forefront when people were alone with their thoughts than in social situations. Bottom line, this research confirms that hiding our burdens only adds weight to our weary souls. The fact is, none of us can change what's happened in the past. What's happened has happened. But remember, we do have a choice about our every today, our every tomorrow, and our future. We can choose to hide, or we can courageously choose to recognize our regrets until they lose their power over us. When we do that, our regrets won't be a finish line. Remember, they'll become a starting line for the rest of our lives. And so as we close this morning, I want to invite us all to make our pew, our chairs, an altar of prayer. But before we spend time in personal prayer today, I want to invite us all to do something. I want to give each of us the opportunity to take that first step of experiencing a new beginning. I want to invite us to recognize our beach balls, our regrets. If you'll take out your worship bulletin that you received this morning, if you turn to the section where you can write sermon notes, you know, take down notes from the message, you'll see towards the bottom one word, and it says regret, with some spaces to fill in some information. So during our brief time of personal prayer today, I want to invite us all to take a moment to prayerfully identify some of those nagging regrets, those nagging beach balls in our lives. We can write a single letter in the space provided, or word, or even draw a symbol or a picture that represents our regret. Now remember, this is just for us, just for us. We're not going to turn these in or anything. We don't have to show them to anyone if we don't want to. This is simply an opportunity for you and I to come clean, to tell ourselves, tell God, and then later on maybe tell someone else about our regret. Remember, as long as we hide our regrets, they have power over us and hinder us from being all that God created us to be. So today can be a first step toward freedom. Today we have the opportunity to start over and experience a new beginning. So let us be silent now before God and take that first step in experiencing a new beginning. Let's take a moment and recognize our beach balls, our regrets, those regrets in our lives. Let us be in an attitude of prayer.